Well, this is a weird segue on Radio Times. Trump supporters claim that special counsel Robert Mueller and the FBI are intent on destroying the president. Here's Fox's Jesse Waters earlier this week.
So the investigation into Donald Trump's campaign has been crooked from the jump. But the scary part is we may now have proof the investigation was weaponized to destroy his presidency for partisan political purposes and to disenfranchise millions of American voters. Now, if that's true, we have a coup on our hands in America.
Senator Mark Warner, Democrat from Virginia, said on Wednesday that any attempt to fire Mueller was reckless, inappropriate, and extremely worrying, and it could lead to a constitutional crisis. Representative Maxine Waters, Democrat from California, reinforced that message yesterday on MSNBC's All In with Chris Hayes.
Well, I think any action that's taken by this president to impede or interfere with this investigation will not be received very well by the members of Congress or by the citizens of this country. So the firing of Rosenstein, the firing of Special Counsel Mueller, any of that is going to get a reaction because we know that this is the worst way that this president can use his power to undermine the rule of law. It is unusual, it is extraordinary, and we just believe that we cannot allow this kind of constitutional crisis to take place without responding to it.
Well, today on the show, the showdown over the Mueller investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 election and possible collusion by the Trump campaign, how it's playing out in the United States, and a little bit later, how it's playing out in Russia. David Korn joins us. He's Washington Bureau Chief for Mother Jones. His books include Showdown and Hubris. David Korn, it's been a couple of years. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Oh, good to be with you. Good transition from Die Hard.
I didn't exactly know how to get from point A to point B, but here we are. Are Robert Mueller's days numbered, or are we just watching some form of political theater, or both?
Well, you are seeing political theater coming from the Republican side, and I hate to sound partisan, but, you know, Robert Mueller is not a Democrat. He is actually a Republican, as was the fellow who appointed him, Rod Rosenstein. And what's sad to see is on an issue in which we should have bipartisan support here in Washington and across the nation, examining what happened when this country was attacked by a foreign adversary targeting one of the bedrocks of our nation, our election system. Instead, we see Republicans doing everything they can to try to shut down and close off early investigations on the Hill and then undermine this special counsel investigation, which began as a counterintelligence investigation under Jim Comey at the FBI, who is another Republican. So it's really quite, I think, disheartening for anybody who cares about good government and also the national security of the United States to watch Republicans put, you know, partisan or political priorities first out there trying to protect the president and people around him from any criticism and from, you know, aiding or abetting or helping or colluding, whatever may or may not have happened with this attack on the United States.
Do you think it's a sign? And, you know, I'm asking you to get into, I guess, Mueller's head or his investigation, and he's been very tight-lipped about it. But do you think there's a sign that Mueller is on to something? I believe there's a meeting today at the White House with some of Trump's lawyers and I believe people from Mueller's team. But do you think we're at that something is coming?
Well, my guess is, you know, he's only been at this less than a year. Investigations of this nature often take several years. The independent counsel in the Watergate, in the Iran-Contra case, didn't bring charges and cases until years after he'd started investigating. So this whole idea that he's even closing in on something may be misguided. He may be in the middle of an investigation and still following different trails. I mean, there's a lot to look at here, whether it's, you know, direct collusion possibility, I'll say, of direct collusion between the campaign and Russia, looking at other things that come up in the course of that investigation, which could be financial misdeeds, as we saw in the case of Paul Manafort. And that obviously there are other people in Trump's orbit who could come under that type of scrutiny. I mean, these are really difficult investigations, particularly if they involve international banking records or communications. So, I mean, I wouldn't say that anything's like coming to a head in the next couple of weeks here. I think this is a long, you know, investigation that takes a lot of patience. And the only question is, to what degree Republicans in Congress and, you know, even in the White House will try to intervene or, you know, or block it, or at least to delegitimize it.
Well, not to get ahead of the story here, but the president, if he wanted to fire Mueller, he can't, right? He has to go through Rosenstein.
Yes, he has to. He could order Rosenstein to do it. And if Rosenstein said no, the president could either accept that or he could fire Rosenstein. And the next person to move up into that position, he could demand that he or she fire and keep going on and on until you find somebody that, you know, that's willing to do it. That's kind of what happened with Watergate when Richard Nixon ordered the Attorney General to fire the special prosecutor. He said no, and eventually it was Robert Bork, who became famous for other reasons, who took the job on and who issued the order to fire him. So yes, I mean, I imagine that eventually he would find somebody to do it, but he might have to hollow out the top ranks of the Justice Department to get that done. But also, I'm not out there saying, there are people out there saying that they think it's imminent that, Trump is going to do this, that he's conspiring to do this. I don't know if that's the case at all. I think it's pointless speculation. I think it's interesting to sort of look at what's possible, given his attacks on the FBI and what he did with Jim Comey. But I do think it would be a complete, constitutional crisis, probably even more serious than Watergate. Should he do that? Remember, with Watergate, we were, the President Nixon was trying to cover up what were really kind of petty, crimes in terms of break-ins, and I don't know, great quite petty, but they were, break-ins and money issues in terms of campaign financing. What's at the core of this investigation is an attack. I mean, it's information warfare. Mm-hmm. It's not with guns and bullets, but it was an attack on the United States from a foreign adversary that wanted to influence an election and, benefited the person in office now. And he has done everything possible, Donald Trump, to not look at this, to not do anything to prevent it from happening again, to deny it even occurred. This is, in that way, since this gets to the bedrock of our principle of our nation, elections that determine who run the government, that I think it's far more serious and the implications are far deeper and wider than what we had during Watergate.
And we're almost having a break here. You crystallized the story. Do you find this a hard story to keep track of?
Yes. There's just a lot of different angles. And whether it's looking at what the campaign did, whether it's looking at what happened after the campaign, whether there was obstruction of justice committed by Donald Trump in the White House and trying to block these investigations. Michael Flynn, who has pled guilty to lying to the FBI, is involved in like five different sub-scandals of his own, involving what work he did for Turkey, whether he lied about talking to the Russian ambassador, and being involved with a project to put nuclear plants in the Middle East and lobbying about that while he was about to be National Security Advisor. There's a lot to cover here.
And that's David Korn, Washington Bureau Chief for Mother Jones. Julia Iafi waiting in the wings. She's staff writer for The Atlantic. Catching up on the week's worth of news over the Mueller investigation, how it's playing in the U.S. and Russia. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane talking about the Mueller investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 election, possible collusion by the Trump campaign. And again, David Korn, Washington Bureau Chief for Mother Jones, joining us. And joining us now is Julia Iafi, and she's a staff writer for The Atlantic. And Julia, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I was talking with David and our listeners about just what has been happening in Congress over the last couple of days. And let me put to you, because you wrote a piece recently in The Atlantic titled What Putin Really Wants. Is Putin, does he want, and was the purpose of whatever Russia did to create kind of chaos and finger pointing and infighting and a kind of chaos in the United States? Do you think that was his goal?
I think that was.
Oh, that is not a good phone line. We're going to try to.
Oh, sorry. Let me try it like this. One second.
Okay.
I think
that's
his
better.
Goal was to interfere in some way in Hillary Clinton's election. He thought that she was the worst possible candidate to deal with if she became president of the United States, that she would not repeal sanctions, that she would continue being tough on Russia, that she would be a continuation of the Obama president's administration's approach to Russia, which she was going to be, probably would be even tougher. You had Donald Trump talking about respect for Putin, pulling America off the world stage and thereby creating more room for Russia on the world stage. And you have to remember that the Russians weren't just in for Donald Trump. They were in for anybody who wasn't Hillary Clinton. They were, you know, publicly supporting Jill Stein. Bernie Sanders got a lot of play on Russia Today and domestic Russian media. There were attempts to reach out to the Jeb Bush campaign. So it was really just anybody who wasn't Hillary Clinton.
Well, they got Donald Trump. Do you think Putin and his allies are pleased with the outcome?
I think they're not. I think they're extremely unhappy because U.S.-Russia relations have never been this bad since the end of the Cold War. They weren't even this bad under the Obama administration, which Putin chafed so badly. They are extremely unhappy with how this turned out. Things got even worse for them because they interfered. So their interference backfired massively for them. They not only didn't get sanctions repealed, they are now baked in for a generation because Congress was so alarmed at the interference that they took away Trump's unilateral ability to repeal them. Not only did they not get back two compounds that the Obama administration seized from them at the end of last year, they got three more taken from them. They got even more diplomats kicked out. There are now FSB, high-ranking FSB officials on the FBI's cyber most wanted list when they used to be very close partners on the counterterrorism beat. So, and now the most unpredictable president in the world is no longer Vladimir Putin, it's Trump. Mm-hmm. And I was in Moscow in early April this year when Donald Trump ordered an air attack on a Syrian airfield after a chemical weapons attack. And the Russians were so taken aback. It had been, 2.5 months since he had been sworn in, and people close to the Russian foreign ministry were saying, maybe Hillary Clinton would have been better for us. She's at least predictable. This guy is insane.
Well, that's it. Julia, hold on one second. Let me give David Corn just a chance to respond to that. That is such a, I would say, interesting but also different perspective of coming out of Russia. How do you see it?
Well, I do think that the Russians did have an affinity for Donald Trump. I don't disagree with what Julia says, and it's an honor to be on with her, about trying to block Hillary Clinton. I believe they want to do that, too. I believe they saw this, and I think the U.S. intelligence community has come to this conclusion, as a threefer. They could block Hillary, revenge for her giving Putin a hard time about election irregularities back when she was Secretary of State in 2011, they could really mess things up here and show that elections aren't that great in democratic countries because we're always giving them a hard time about their absence of democracy. If they can discredit democracy here and elsewhere in other Western European nations, it helps them out. Mm-hmm. And I do think that at the time, they thought, here's a guy talking about getting rid of sanctions, keeps saying what a great guy Putin is. Well, he'd be much easier to deal with, and he may even actually help us get things done that we want to get done. So I think it was a bunch of factors. But I also agree, from early on, maybe even before the election day itself, there was some second thoughts happening within the Kremlin about the wisdom of doing this and getting behind Donald Trump. And there's been some dismay ever since that it makes it harder for them to have, if not a positive relationship with the United States, at least a stable one.
Well, Julia, let me read something that you wrote in The Atlantic. The subversion of the election, this is the American election, was as much a product of improvisation and entropy as it was of long-range vision. What makes Putin effective, what makes him dangerous, is not strategic brilliance, but a tactical flexibility and adaptability, a willingness to experiment, to disrupt, and to take big risks. Do you think we in the United States overestimate Putin's wiliness?
Absolutely. I don't think we overestimate his wiliness, but his capabilities, and B, his strategic long-term vision. If he was so omniscient, wouldn't he have understood that, you know, if he were caught, this is what would happen? And if he elected somebody as unpredictable and mercurial as Donald Trump, this is what would happen? He has a long track record of doing something very bold and audacious, where the consequences of that move seem to take him completely by surprise. And then he has to do another crazy thing to deal with the blowback from that thing.
Is he dangerous, though? I mean, how dangerous do you see him?
I think he's somebody who's unpredictable and who will go to great lengths to stay in power. I just don't think it makes him unique in that way. I think there's a lot of, you know, authoritarian leaders who just want to stay in power and, for understandable reasons, think the U.S. is coming after them to remove them from power under the guise of democracy promotion. So I think when people feel really threatened, they do crazy things. I think what's really dangerous is for us to not understand what we're dealing with and to make him out to be this genius, this brilliant tactical or strategic genius, which he's not, and to not really understand what's going on, to act like Russia and Putin are just completely mysterious and impossible to understand, and how can we ever know what's going on in his mind? He pretty much says what he wants and what he means, and it's not that hard to divine what he wants for Russia and what he wants vis-a-vis the U.S.
Would that be saying?
And I think it's about time we listen up.
Well, David, do you think the same could be said for President Trump?
I think Vladimir Putin is far wilier and more knowledgeable than Donald Trump, and probably less impulsive. He obviously has an agenda, and he's been very clear about what he wants to do in terms of, you know, reviving his version of the Soviet or former, you know, great Russian Empire. And he, you know, sees the United States as an obstacle to that and as a threat, perhaps, to his stability within power. So I think in some ways, you know, he was, you know, I'm not sure it was audacious. I'm not sure it was reckless what he did in the campaign, because he ended up still, for all the problems they may have with the United States now, he ended up with a president of the United States who seems pretty uninterested in boxing Putin in and responding to what he did to us or what he's doing to other countries, and is giving him a tremendous amount of free rein. I think Trump has been a bit clumsy about this, and because it's been so obvious that he's been gotten the better of by Putin, he now is boxed in and can't do some of the policy matters that he probably wanted to do, such as getting rid of sanctions and other things like that. So it's become, you know, a complicated, if not awkward, situation. But I don't think Putin stumbled into it. I mean, I think he was trying to, you know, at least get some chaos here, and then probably thought, well, you know, that would help him, and he'd figure out how to deal with that down the road.
Julia, and David as well, and I'm probably asking you to understand something that just certainly confounds me, and I think a lot of other people, which is why candidate Trump and now President Trump really refuses to utter a critical word about Vladimir Putin. And Juliet, since you know Russia better than most people and have some feel for Vladimir Putin, how do you see that?
From Trump's perspective or Putin's perspective?
Well, maybe from Putin's perspective, but just as someone, as an observer of what's been happening in these two countries and their leaders.
So, you know, I think from Trump's perspective, it's, you know, it goes with his affinity for authoritarian strongmen that he clearly, you know, admires and wants to be like. So I don't think Putin is his affection or regard for Putin is unique in that regard. He seems to regard Erdogan of Turkey very well. He seems to regard Xi of China, you know, very highly. Same with Duterte of the Philippines, these very autocratic leaders. He seems to think that that is kind of the apogee of executive presidential power, and that's clearly what he's striving for, which should give us pause at home. I think from Putin's perspective, I think it has probably evolved. I think originally from his perspective, it was music to his ears, right? Here's a president or a presidential candidate in the U.S. who's talking about Putin in the reverential terms he has long craved to hear from the United States. And talking about respecting Russia as a great power, as opposed to Obama, who purposely derided Russia as a regional power, which drove Putin to distraction. But now I think there's a lot of frustration in Moscow that those guys all talk. You know, he talks about, you know, how lovely Putin is, but he can't do anything to help him. The narrative in Russia is that Trump's hands are tied by the national security and foreign policy establishments who so hate Russia, as opposed to this is what happened because you meddled in our elections and you got caught.
Well, that's interesting. David, I know you want to add something. Go ahead.
I would just say one thing to Trump's affinity for Putin and other repressive leaders. Part of it comes from business. He has tried for decades to get a tower built in Moscow. He has interest in the Philippines and in Turkey. And so even during the campaign, while he was running for president, his office was still trying to negotiate a deal to build a mega tower in Moscow. Now, the way government works in Russia, it's not surprising, is you can't do that without government permission. And so do you think you could build a multi-million-dollar project in Moscow while you're attacking or saying anything critical about Vladimir Putin? Of course not. So he has put his business interests ahead of any ideas about policy or personal connections to Putin as well. You can't discount that.
Julie, you want to add something? Go ahead.
Yes, I've actually done extensive reporting about Trump's efforts to build something in Moscow. And Trump has been talking about this for 30 years. And after 30 years of talk and efforts and exploration in Moscow, there are exactly zero Trump buildings in Moscow or anywhere else in Russia. Meanwhile, every hotel chain, big or small, has an outpost in Russia and in Moscow and St. Petersburg and various other cities. The W, the Four Seasons, Hilton, Marriott, you name it, Radisson, they're all there except for Trump. So, and one of the reasons is that the Russians didn't know the Trump name from Adam, and they didn't feel like paying through the nose for this brand that didn't mean anything to them. And because Trump's go-between, who was trying to secure permission and secure a local partner to build something in Moscow, was too shady even for the Russians, and actually didn't have any political connections to speak of. So, you know, with all due respect to David, the reporting and the facts kind of point in a different direction.
No, my only point is that he wanted to do this. This was a goal of his. And so if that's his goal, including while he's running for president, he is not going to be dumping on Putin while he is at the same time trying to get something business-wise going in Moscow. That's my point.
And we have about a minute here. I know we could go on, and it's actually quite fascinating. Let me ask you, though, David Cornyn, I don't have time to play a clip from earlier this week, but there was a real celebration at the White House, the passage of the tax bill. Orrin Hatch saying to the president, you are living up to everything I thought you would. You're one heck of a leader. We're all benefiting from it. You may be the best president in U.S. history. Of course, you know, looking into the future. What did you make of that gathering? We have about 30 seconds, and I apologize.
You know, I felt like I woke up and I was living in North Korea. I mean, and I couldn't even get through the four-minute-long tribute that Mike Pence paid the president. You know, our elected leaders are, we don't pick kings, we don't pick deal leaders, and we treat them as if they're like, you know, peers, but not in the Trump cabinet, not in the Trump White House. You have to show adulation for him. Otherwise, you're out. And it's a sad thing to see this happen to the Republican Party.
Well, on that note, we'd love to have the two of you back together again to carry on this conversation.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
And Merry Christmas to you as well. David Cornyn, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Washington Bureau Chief for Mother Jones and Julia Iafi, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. She's staff writer for The Atlantic. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out much more about this program. Adam Staniszewski, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us, and Merry Christmas.